Can I ask you a question?
Well.
Do you miss the old me?
Sometimes. I do. And some people are going to think about that and be like,
that's
what?
That's crazy.
But I guarantee you there are people listening to this who might tear up a little bit and think, wow, like, I do miss that person. We had some good times.
Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Till the Wheels Fall Off. I'm Matt.
I'm Paige.
We're talking about being brain dead today.
Yeah.
In so many words. We're talking about anhedonia, a state of numbness that many people report feeling in early recovery. As it turns out, it's not exactly unique to people in recovery. You might be feeling some of this as well.
Yes.
And we are going to get into it after some quick announcements. First things first, we've got a course out there if you weren't aware. It's called Independently Strong. You can find out more by going to independentlystrong.com. It is the, I'm just going to say it, it's groundbreaking in the sense that I don't know if there's anything else like this out there.
Yes.
A path of recovery tailored to spouses and partners of alcoholics and addicts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people get help from Al-Anon, but even in Al-Anon, it's the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, not necessarily like unique to this situation. This is what we did to get out. This is what we found helpful for others to get out. There's clinical backed research in it by Dr. Christopher Taylor. It is comprehensive. It is what you need. If you're interested, check it out, independentlystrong.com or by going to our website, tufo.com.
We've got TWFO.
Information on either one of those. It's Please. Awesome. You can get 75% off using the code WHEELIES75. That's WHEELIES with an S, 75. Next things up, we've got our workshop coming
Wheelie Workshop.
I like that.
I love it.
June 8th, the Wheelie Workshop. First ever.
What's it's up? Wheelie Wednesday, too, if you're listening to this on the day it's released.
This is Wheelie Wednesday.
Yes.
I love that.
I do, too.
That was such a
shout
great.
Shout out to the Wheelie who came up with
that. Such a great name that you came up with.
I still don't know if I came up with it.
You totally did.
But you seemed like it wasn't that cool when I came up with it.
No, I loved it.
Okay. I don't remember. Brain dead.
Brain dead. Workshop is coming up. So a full day with us from 9 to 4, we will feed you. We will give
I'm
you
there.
Coffee and caffeine. We have an amazing agenda planned. And we've had the question, is this something that me and my partner could attend together?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is yes, absolutely it is. But we do have a stipulation. You must be in recovery. You must be sober. And that doesn't just mean that day.
Yeah.
You must be define yourself as someone who's in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you're working an actual program or not is beside the point for me. I need people that are sober there and present and ready to learn, ready to participate. This is not a workshop to get people sober. This is a workshop to better understand the journey of a spouse and partner, how to rebuild a relationship, and what to do if you're sort of in limbo. That's what we are going to cover.
Yeah.
Some of the things we're going to talk about, how addiction affects the family, relationship dynamics. We're going to have group discussions, breakout sessions. We're going to have exercises. We're going to talk about communication, boundaries 101, self-care, making a plan, and many, many more topics will be covered.
And just connecting with people is going to be huge.
Yeah, that's going to be a big part of this as well, as connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to double down on that the following day. I hope that everyone that comes to the workshop can stay for the next day if you're coming from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Because the next morning we are going to have a wheelie meetup. To get together, let's have some coffee. Everyone just talk. Hey, it's me from the internet. How are you? You know, like that's fun.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Right?
Hugs.
Yeah. Hey, and if, actually no, take that back because we haven't prepped it yet. I want to do name tags of some kind.
We are going to have name tags.
For the meetup.
Oh, then you can do that. I'm doing the others.
Yeah. I didn't want to volunteer
That's
you
on you, dear.
Chances this gets done, 0%.
I was going to say.
1%. 1%. I'll give myself a 1% chance of getting that done. Hey, next thing, you're probably aware, but if you're not aware, we have a free Facebook community called TUFO Community. You can find it by clicking the link in any of our bios on our social media profiles, which is probably how you discovered us. Although many people discover us through the podcast.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure that they know that the community exists. It's an amazing place to just be heard, sometimes just to vent, to read about what other people are going through. You will not feel so alone in the world. I can promise you that. you get some people in there with some amazing perspectives that give their experience. They share what they've done, what has worked, what hasn't worked, or sometimes just someone just lay their head on your shoulder and say, it's okay, I've been there before.
Yeah, and we throw in community calls every once in a while whenever our schedules are not totally out of whack. And we allow crosstalk. We let you, you know, get some input from others who have been in the same shoes as you. And it's just, it's been really powerful for a lot of people to get on these calls and just chat with everybody.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Imagine doing that in person. You could do that on June 9th.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yep.
Hey, if you are a listener, we're going to need your help. Paige and I are asking a favor of you. First, if you haven't already left a review of the show, please do that. Leave a rating and review. It helps other people find it. It helps people know that this thing exists so others can get help as well. Another thing, if you're a listener and you're in our community, one of the first answers to most of the questions that pops up is, generally, there's an episode that covers this.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've checked out the podcast yet, but check this out. This is what I learned from it. I would love people's input on that. Many people find us through social media channels like TikTok or Instagram, and they don't know the podcast exists. Or maybe they just don't know about podcasts. Like a lot of people, that's a new medium for them. Paige is raising her hand. So let them know the podcast exists. There's a lot of answers in those episodes. And it's not to lazily like just defer someone out. It is simply to get, help people get the resources and the information
Absolutely.
They need. Many times they're coming in with this question. They feel like, man, I've got to get this answered without realizing there could be several episodes, hours of information that are already out there to help them through it.
Yeah, there's solid advice in the community. Like, I'm so proud of the Wheelies. Man. It's been amazing watching them grow and thrive and share what they have learned and how they're like getting through this.
Yeah. And if you're a quiet Wheelie, if you're more of a lurker, you know, chime in every so often, let us know where you're at. I think the coolest journey is to see someone like when they first come in about and what they're going through. Some of them are anonymous, so you don't know what's going on, but for people that will post, you can see their progression over months and sometimes even weeks and the things that they're learning and these aha moments they have and they're sharing those with other people. And that inspires others to walk that same path, which is what we're all trying to do here.
Yep.
Gain some clarity and heal. And
empowerment.
It's just people helping people, man. It's so cool to watch.
I love it.
So cool to watch. It's a valuable resource. If you don't know about it, go check it out. It's TWFO community, TWFO community. We'd love to have you in there.
Yep.
I think that does it for announcements today.
Okay.
I think.
You wrote them all down. You actually made notes.
Yeah, I made a little bit.
Okay, cool. Let's get into it.
Okay, we're going to be talking about anhedonia.
Okay, can I ask a question?
Sure.
I don't know why I asked you that. I'm not going to ask you that anymore. I'm just going to ask a damn question.
Yeah, like what am I going to say? No.
I know, it's so stupid. Okay.
No, you may not.
Is this similar to pause?
Okay, so I read about this today.
Okay.
I didn't find any information that went hand in hand, like, oh, hey, this is anhedonia versus pause. I saw a lot of articles, though, talk about them almost like they were occurring concurrently. Occurring concurrently, it's hard to say. But separate, as far as I can tell.
Okay.
To me, it felt like one and the same.
That's why you see my face, because I'm like, they sound the same to me, and I feel like we're just like pulling out so much different information that can get really confusing whenever it feels the same or it sounds the same.
Yeah. And pause. Have we covered pause in an episode?
I don't know if we've actually covered pause in an episode. If we did, it would have been a while ago, but I know you did a TikTok on it. That was very informative.
Yeah. I know that we've covered it in like reels and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't remember if we did an actual episode.
Okay. So pause is an acronym for post-acute withdrawal syndrome.
Correct.
And it can occur anywhere between a couple of weeks or even months, or some people even long term, like longer than that.
Yeah.
Where you have the feelings of withdrawal. For me, it was really weird. So I was on the pink cloud of recovery and really, really happy for like 80 days. And they told me about the 90-day mark is when a lot of people get this. And it was almost 90 days to the day. I woke up feeling low on energy, just like really fatigued, like brain fog. I felt like I was like sweaty and just really irritable, short tempered. And it felt like day two.
I feel like that today.
And we will discuss why. Because it's not like anhedonia is not just unique to people that are in early recovery, but it is extremely common. In fact, I would say I've never seen someone not go through this period
yeah.
of like mental malaise where you just feel like you've got a fog around you 24/7.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult. It's really difficult to get through. I will link a resource in the show notes. So I think one of the wheelies linked this from an organization called treehouserecovery.com. It's got a really good breakdown of anhedonia, complete with the YouTube video and all kinds of really awesome stuff. But anhedonia essentially describes a state of mind that feels like blah. That's the only way I can describe it. It feels like blah.
Yeah.
You can't get happy about anything. You're not excited about anything. Your memory is completely shot. Zero drive or motivation, almost like a depressed state. And it's tough because you feel hopeless in it. Like, if this is what sobriety is like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
I don't want to go through this crap. Like, this is terrible. I'd rather just use again. And so a lot of people get to this period and they think this is what sobriety is. And they tend to relapse because of it. I've seen this happen more than a few times where someone's like, I just couldn't deal with the lack of energy, especially a lot of people that have used uppers. I use downers and opiates. Uppers, but opiates, same thing.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that, that feeling of joy and excitement just kind of fades and you feel like the world is just grayscale and it's just awful. It's awful. Everything just feels blank and it makes you vulnerable to relapse.
Oh, right. And it also makes you feel nothing and you can try to do stuff that would typically bring you pleasure, but it doesn't work.
Not nearly the same.
You're still just like, nothing's working. Nothing's helping. Nothing. This is just going to be my life. And this is how I'm going to feel forever.
Yeah. And I will also link Dr. Andrew Huberman Huberman Labs is mm-hmm. my favorite podcast. And he's a genius. This guy is like beyond smart. He's a neuroscientist.
Yeah.
And he did an episode and it's really just a short, like, I think it's like a 6 or 7 minute clip, a YouTube clip about dopamine and addiction mm-hmm. that I think is worth mentioning here. I'm just going to touch high level, but I will link it in the show notes. Hang on, let me make a note before I forget that. Because both of us are dealing with some clarity issues today.
Yes, we are.
And our dog says hello if you can't hear that in the background. Okay, so Huberman talks about dopamine and essentially anhedonia and even the reasons that we seek drugs in the first place. It all goes back to this word dopamine.
Pleasure.
Pleasure, right? Everyone knows what it feels like to get a rush of dopamine.
Yeah.
Drug users know very, very well what it's like to get a rush of dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
Like cocaine, for instance, is known for having one of the biggest dumps.
It gives you the most, right?
It is crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy. I mean, you feel so euphoric. Like you could never have dreamed that you could feel that good in that moment. But it's got a really, really, really fast and high spike. So you get to where you want to be in a very short period of time and it spikes and then you crash down hard.
Do you remember this feeling?
Yeah, I remember it. It's fun and when it's going on, but the crash is terrible.
Yeah.
But all that does, dopamine is such that it leaves you wanting more.
Right.
You're chasing that feeling again. You want more, 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 more. So anyway, there are baseline levels of dopamine. And each time you go through one of these cycles of getting high and coming down, your baseline level of operating dopamine decreases over time.
Okay.
So not only is it harder to get high, when you come down, you're lower than low. So it's like this vicious cycle of chasing that feeling again that you can never really quite get. But being sober feels so terrible because you can't feel anything. That it leaves you really, it feels like no choice. Like in order to function today, I need to do something.
Well, doesn't your body not produce the dopamine as it should when you're under the substances?
Yeah, so there's a feedback loop and sort of like hormones, like testosterone production, for instance. Let's say that you go on testosterone replacement therapy. We've talked about this in an episode.
Yes.
Didn't we talk about this?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm making sure.
Yeah, doing the intimacy questions.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so if you get testosterone replacement therapy, so if you get exogenous testosterone, so from the outside, the source of your own body, your endogenous system, the systems inside your body stop producing it because your body's like, hey, I've detected that there's testosterone and I didn't have to make it. So you're getting it from somewhere else. So good night. I'm going to sleep.
Yeah.
Your body just stops making it. And sometimes it never comes back online, but dopamine sort of works the same way. If
right.
you're getting all the stimulus from other places, you're not getting the natural dopamine kicks that you would normally get in a day-to-day whatever you're doing, right? If it's seeing your kids, or if it's going to work, or if it's completing a task or getting a chore done, whatever it is, the things that bring us joy in day-to-day life.
Chores don't bring me joy.
Completing a chore.
Oh.
Like, you know, that feeling of accomplishment that you get? Like these little wins.
Yes, like when laundry is done.
Getting those little wins.
Oh, man, that is like,
that's like your cocaine,
that
isn't
it? Yes, it is, because I fucking hate laundry, and our laundry is so bad right now, and I really do think that that's why I'm struggling right now.
Yeah.
Well, it's partially why I'm struggling right now mentally. But yes, I understand that feeling.
Yeah, so there's a lot of parts of the brain that are at play here when it comes to desire, reward. We've talked about those in speaking of the book, Biology of Desire. And we actually cover that pretty in depth in the course, talking about the different parts of the brain that are affected here. The amygdala, prefrontal cortex, the, you don't want to get into that.
I don't.
She's giving me like, nope, don't even go there.
I don't.
Don't even go there. Okay. So all that is to say is that some of these regions in the brain shrink and it becomes harder and harder to feel good again. It's hard to feel good again. Really difficult. So when you first get sober, life feels like bleh.
This happens with sugar addicts as well.
Really? Well, I mean, maybe not to the degree that cocaine addicts suffer. But.
Right. Well, the cocaine addicts, that's giving you, like you said, like the highest amount of dopamine that you're going to get. But sugar does give you a kick of dopamine. See, I can't even freaking talk today. And it's addictive. And that's why.
And it becomes much harder to control your mood, and you're also less likely to feel, like we talked about, emotions of any kind in response to your environment. Like stimulus just doesn't hit the same. Seeing your kids doesn't feel as good. Seeing your favorite team win doesn't feel as good. All the things that normally bring you joy don't bring you joy. So you're just in this malaise, this horrible bleh feeling. It's tough. I was prepared for it. We had a discussion about this before I left. And I also knew, just being around a 12-step community, that everyone said, like, this is part of it, kid.
Yeah, they're warning you. They're telling you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what's important about our podcast, too, when it comes to, like, different things, of telling people, like, this is what can happen.
Be aware this is what happens. Yeah. And so I've never talked to someone in early recovery who doesn't have some degree of this. Some of it's really, really bad, to the degree they're like, I think something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
I need to get some help. Like, this doesn't feel right at all. I've never felt so low, so depressed. And I'm not a doctor. We are not doctors. Never claimed to be. If you feel like you are having what could be like a major depressive episode, you
know, obviously talk to your doctor.
Yep. Talk to your doctor about that. There could be something more to it. And if it's prolonged, like some people with symptoms of pause that last for more than 9 months, they recommend, like, you should see a doctor about this. You know, they could take a look around, start poking around, see what's going on. Mm-hmm. Could be something more to it. Mm-hmm. So our experience with this, that's all we really have to share in any given day anyway, was our experience with
putting
this.
Putting that in there.
Yeah. And so did we experience this?
Yeah.
Abso-freaking-lutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely you do. Really, really difficult. So you want to go through yours first or mine?
I want to go through yours first.
Okay. Some guy referred to me as what did he call me? A trash can junkie. Because I would have done anything. It was like just anything. Like, didn't matter what
so
it was.
True.
I would have done it, you know?
Yeah.
So I was using on any given day Adderall, like a lot of Adderall, amphetamine. I was using opiates. I was using alcohol. I was using Valium or Xanax. I was using weed. What am I missing here? I think that's it.
I think that's the main.
Like the average day. Like,
yes.
That was, and then
yes.
you would dabble in other, like
a special weekend.
Yeah, but on any given day, I had a lot of drugs in my body, and I had it kind of worked out like this little pharmaceutical speedball system, where in the mornings I'd take the uppers, and then when that started getting jittery and shaky from that, I would take downers, and then when I started to nod off, I'd take more uppers.
And then you'd come home and drink.
And then I'd come home like
smoke.
Shaken, you know, like freaked out, my eyes geeked out of my head, and then I would, drink and smoke all night. Mm-hmm. When I got sober, it was like, I hadn't been sober in like for more than a day in over a decade. And when I say a day, is because I might have had like a stomach flu and just didn't do anything that day.
Yeah, but I mean, you would still... Okay, but whenever you were going through your own withdrawal or whatever, were you still smoking and stuff?
Oh, like when I was trying to detox.
When you were trying to... Yeah.
I never went like completely sober.
Okay.
I would use something. I would supplement something.
Right,
always.
Right. Okay.
I would take Valium for anxiety, or I would take, you know, I would smoke weed for the nerves.
And you took the other stuff for like, that were for opiates. You were taking
Suboxone. Yeah, I take I tried to quit on Suboxone more times than I can count.
Right.
And that would
last. So you were still taking things.
There was always, I was always taking pills to counteract.
So legit,
pills.
You did not have one, like maybe one full day without doing something.
No. And so when I got sober, I remember being in treatment and I weaned off of opiates over the course of 3 days using a drug called Subutex. And it's like Suboxone, just a sublingual version, goes under your tongue. Yeah. And I think they'd prescribed me like a 2 week dose of it to like land the plane softly, you know, not just crash land it. And day three, I was like, you know what? I was so disgusted with myself. Like, I am so sick of taking something. I'm just going to deal with it. And so day three, I just went cold turkey. And it was rough for several days. You're not even thinking about like the mental piece of it as much because you're in so much physical pain from withdrawal. But once that clears up, you start to come back to life a little bit. But it's not life like you remember life. It's not life like you even remember life whenever you were high and using. Because let's be real. Like we've talked about, I've given my opinion about quote unquote functional alcoholics, functional addicts. You're not really functioning, but that's the baseline level that you get used to functioning at. So for me, let's call it, for the sake of this conversation, functioning.
Okay, right.
Any given day, I was going to work, I was coming home, whether or not like we had real conversations, I don't even remember, but probably very few of them, but I was around, I was present. People knew, like they saw my face every day. I was showing up to the office and doing things. When you get off of all this stuff, like it feels like you're in kindergarten. Like you can't do, you can't put sentences together. Mm-hmm. You'll slur your words sometimes. You feel off, man. It's like after you've been really, really sick and you like, you cannot believe how tired you are. It feels like that.
Yeah.
And it lasted me, I mean, weeks and weeks and weeks. It was horrible. It felt like crap. And then you start to come back physically, like the energy part, which is like the biggest drag in the
beginning. So this happened in treatment?
Yeah, this happened in treatment.
Okay.
And then coming out of it, like when I was going through the IOP, because I got out of treatment and went to an IOP for 90 days. And so I was at work all day and like I was trying to feel anything. So, you know, if you put something in front of me, I'm going to abuse it. Well, when I was sober, I chose to abuse caffeine, which is, I guess, better than other things. Yeah, and candy, we'll get there in a sec. But I drank a lot of coffee, a lot of Red Bulls because it's like my body was craving some kind of stimulus. Like, dude, you need something. That's what it was like telling me. But I think physically there was some stuff going on too. Like my dopamine levels were so low.
Right.
Because I was so used to just being on this ride, you know? And then all of a sudden you pull it from me and it was like,
your body wasn't producing it anymore.
And not even, it wasn't like I was after trying to feel joyful even. Like I was just trying to be.
To feel.
Just feel anything, but more than anything, like just trying to be like cognitively present. Like I couldn't do
focus.
Simple math, focus, that's a better word for it. Yeah, focus. I couldn't do simple math in my head. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember what someone had told me from a couple minutes before. It feels like almost like I've never had dementia, I hope anyway. Hope I don't have it now, but it feels like how I imagine that would feel. Like you just can't remember anything. It's crazy feeling. You were just so out of it. So when we talk about building a relationship in early recovery, consider that this is going on for most everybody. This feeling of just blah, where I know that you wanted to have some really, really big conversations. You wanted to get back involved. Hey, man, we've got little kids. It's time to get your ass in gear. Time to be a dad, time to go to work, get that promotion, work your program, go to the gym. We're going to be happy and healthy. Let's go.
You do know? All the things.
Like clapping, like, let's go. And it's like, time out. Like, I'm not right. I'm not right. And then pause hit about 90 days in. But I think all in, if we're just talking about a time frame all in, it took me before I felt stable, like when I was getting, like felt normal again, it was like 6 to 9 months. And there's a lot of biological reasons for that, healing in the mind.
I felt like you hid this really well.
Here's the thing. I didn't necessarily know any better because every day it was getting like 1% better. And I had gone through the like Dr. Garrison, when I was in treatment, gave a lecture about the neuroscience of recovery. And they showed like different substances. This is how long it takes the brain to recover. And there's healing going on for up to 18 months.
Yeah.
And so I knew that there would be like some little more aha moments that would happen over and over. But after getting past about that 60, 90 day mark, I felt really good. Like I was like, this is great. Like, okay, I can do this. It gets to a level where It's like, okay, if this is my new normal, I can totally do this.
I don't remember this.
I was thinking about that. And I,
are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you going to get here?
Yeah. Well, I think part of, so when I think about our early recovery experience, one thing, and a lot of people ask us like, how did y'all do it? How did you not freak out? How, we had a 9-month-old,
mm-hmm.
we had a 9-month-old daughter,
mm-hmm.
and we were, you had really bad postpartum depression.
Yeah.
And we were trying to fix all this stuff.
And you were gone all the time.
When I say we were distracted, like we were distracted. Like as a couple, we were distracted.
Yeah.
We weren't really having serious intimate conversations, which is why we do this damn show.
Well, I mean, we were because whenever you would come home from your meetings, we were discussing things.
We were discussing, yeah, what I'm learning.
We were talking about what, and I remember, you being like, pretty upbeat. That's why I don't remember you going through this.
So here's why I loved going to meetings so much, because it gave me the dopamine kick I was after.
Oh,
it was the only way and the only place that I felt safe and comfortable. And I felt like I was me again.
Wow.
The okay. only place. I loved it there for that. I think it's part of the reason.
You became addicted to it.
In some ways, yeah. In some ways, yeah. But if you're going to get addicted to something, get addicted to that.
No, for sure.
Hang on, I made it here in my notes. I'm not going to read these stupid notes. I can't even read right now anyway.
Yeah.
We're just
having a conversation.
Just talk about it. Yes. So something that's difficult about, like, I'm just sort of like, I guess I came out of the womb just like seeking reward, seeking stimulus of some kind.
Pleasure.
I think I was just like a dopamine fiend from the freaking get-go. I always was. I was an overweight kid. I loved food. Food gave me that when I was younger. Like, I was the fat kid growing up and it gave me that. I figured out like I can make myself feel better and get this like rush.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like people pleasing type stuff. Like I would like to be the funny kid. I like to make people laugh. I like to wait. When I made someone else feel good, I felt good about myself.
Mm-hmm.
In recovery, like the structure of a 12-step program gave me guardrails with I could operate in that I could be rewarded for good behaviors. So when you show up to a meeting, and I didn't share for a while. I just listened. But in listening, I could connect the dots in my own head. I was like, I'm doing a good thing. Like, this is right where I need to be. And I was proud of myself. And I started to feel self-esteem for the first time in years. And I was like proud of myself, man. I came back to life and I was just, I remember leaving meetings just on a freaking high, just like feeling so good about the path that we were walking.
Yeah.
And the things I was doing. And then when you go into a meeting and you share an experience about how, let's say you had a tough day, but you took a new action, like you get people to come up to you and like give you hugs and like, I'm proud of you. Like, that's awesome. Like, you get rewarded. You get chips for that denote varying lengths of sobriety. So like, you get these little like tokens. And that to me was, it was everything. I think that's where I got that stimulus early on. That plus sugar. That was the other thing.
And caffeine.
Caffeine too. Yeah. I still drink 5-6 cups of coffee a day probably.
Yeah. You're crazy.
I
would die.
Coffee's like my favorite drink.
I get 2 to 3 a day and that's about it. I'm so way too sensitive to that stuff.
I can drink coffee at like 8 and go to bed at 9.
Yeah, no, you're psycho. It's changing though for you. It's shifting. You're getting to where you can't do that anymore. But I just don't remember this much for you. I feel like you were, like you said, I was really distracted. We talked about how the first year was kind of fuzzy for me anyway, because there were a lot of changes going on. So I don't remember specifically discussing this with you and you going through it.
I don't remember.
But you were also working out and stuff at some point too.
That was after a year.
Okay.
The first year I didn't do any kind of workout. The first year I ate every feeling I had that I didn't process in a meeting with the sponsor.
Yeah.
I gained 70 something pounds my first year sober, mm-hmm. to the point where I was wearing men's Spanx.
Yeah.
Have I told that story?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so.
Yeah. If you're not aware, they make men's Spanx for guys with man boobs. And I wore them.
I remember.
I was the best customer for a while. I think I was like the early adopter.
But you were so happy at that time. I do remember that. You had a lot of pleasure.
Absolutely. Like, you were happy. I was coming back to life and I was proud of the person I was for the first time.
Yeah. But then you started getting your dopamine fixes from healthier outlets.
Yes. Oh, another thing. When I would come home and we would have those conversations, that gave me a dopamine kick too. That made me feel good.
I think that I got dopamine kicks from those conversations as well, because it's intimate conversations. Like, yeah, it's a good thing. It's something that's bringing you pleasure. I think that's where we get a lot of our dopamine kicks these days too, is from our conversations. Like, we have really good talks.
You know, and I was thinking about this today when we were kind of talking about the episode, is I think that what those conversations did was they kept our hope tank full.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're going to be okay. We're going to figure this out. And we're not just going to figure this out. We're going to be better than before. And like, we could see it and it was tangible. And that got me really excited. It got you really excited. It got us pumped. It gave us dopamine kick.
So
got us feeling hopeful again.
What about the spouses, and how can they handle their partners while they're going through this? Because I don't have, like I said, I don't remember you going through this. So I don't have much advice or tips to give on that. Because I know that they're questioning it and they're wondering, well, when is my partner going to be happy again? When are they going to be able to feel the feels? Like, some of them can't cry. Like, you're just totally numb.
Yeah.
Totally. And that's
like
scary.
You come home like a robot. So I will say, and for the sake of this conversation and just for our story, it's important to know that we've always had an intimate relationship, like close relationship,
mm-hmm.
except for when I was in active addiction. But prior to that, we were very close.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about our hopes and dreams and aspirations, and there was no ego between us. And we had, like, you could tease me and pick on me, and we had fun. And like, it was always been fun. We've always been close. That faded quite a bit, and the point was nearly non-existent at the very end.
Right.
And then we got it back. I'm not like everyone in that sense, is that there are some people that just aren't that intimate. They're just not that comfortable sharing their feelings. Maybe you're not as close. It's not to say you can't be one day, but there's some people, like, I'm thinking about, I know a guy who I've known him my whole life. I've only seen him cry one time in my entire life. One time. Doesn't ever talk about his feelings. Doesn't even know how, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So that person coming out of treatment, I would imagine you're going to get much more of that. Like, I would not expect this like 180 degree shift where it's like, oh, hey, now I understand the language of emotions and I understand how to talk. So I think it's important to note is that someone who'd never been that way, it's probably going to be even more severe. It's going to feel even colder. It's like, does this ever get better?
Yeah.
Well, you're damn right. It can.
Mm-hmm.
It can. If you do the work,
mm-hmm.
it can get better. So we talked about emotional sobriety in our episode on dry drunk. And what that really means, and how to understand the language of emotions, and how to begin to have these kinds of conversations, how to open up, how to be vulnerable. A lot of that stuff was taught to me even more so in the program, like the program that I worked.
Yeah.
But as far as like what worked, what didn't work, kind of to your question, what worked for me was our conversations. And so this is something I always feel really, really sleazy saying or even asking spouses to do. But it's important to celebrate the little wins. It's important to acknowledge the little wins. It's important to, when you see a new positive behavior, it's important to say something.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I'm not saying that's right or that's fair. I'm not saying that your experience is should not be honored, that you haven't been hurt, that we could have a conversation. Does this person deserve grace? You know, I believe in grace, but does that person deserve that? No, but that's the thing about grace. It's freely given, not deserved, not earned even. It's just given. So I don't know. That's a different question about the relationship as a whole, but you know, because there's such a thing as a total relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If it's there, like, I don't know if any of this even matters. But for us, I think it was huge when I would come home and I would have conversations about this. And
but did you have conversations about this with me?
About anhedonia?
Yeah.
I remember just speaking in vague terms about feeling cloudy, feeling foggy. And okay. I think we both looked at each other like, well, yeah, it's to be expected.
Okay.
Like, intuitively,
I didn't think anything
sense.
Of it. And that's how I feel. Like, I just didn't think much of it.
And I remember talking to you about post-acute withdrawal. Because I remember where I was when I realized it happening. I was in the driveway at our house down on White Rock.
In Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I remember that day. Like, I remember when it hit and I was like, oh, man.
Did you tell me?
Yep.
And do you remember what
I called
the conversation
you about it
was?
And we just talked about it. And after I talked about it, I felt better. And I went to a meeting that night.
Okay. So I guess I wasn't too involved in it. And I mean, I always was there to listen to you and be there for you, but I'm also like not focusing too much on what you were doing because like you said, we were so distracted.
And you were in survival mode still. You were coming out of 10 years of abuse.
Yeah. Which we didn't know, but
didn't realize this.
Yeah. And so I was still working and I still had a little baby and like still doing your thing and doing okay, but I wasn't going to like focus on your recovery as much.
No, you were there for me. You were always there for me. And you've always been my biggest supporter and my biggest fan, always. And so almost like whenever you've got like, you're like, say you got a new baby around the house, every time they do something, mm-hmm. you like clap for them and you cheer. Yeah, that's how you've always been.
Yeah, I have been like that for you. Anytime you do anything, I'm just like, oh.
And that helped. That helped so much. It gave me like, I'm doing a good thing. Like, this is great. If it did anything at all, it helped rewire my reward center in my mind, mm-hmm. that it wasn't coming from drugs and alcohol anymore. It was coming from new healthy behaviors. And when you get positive reinforcement for that, that creates the feedback loop. Okay. So I'm not seeking it the other way anymore. Mm-hmm. I got to get it through the foundation has to change. It's got to be through new behaviors. It's got to be through these conversations.
What types of new behaviors? What would you tell somebody who is going through this right now that is in recovery?
In recovery,
what are some good coping mechanisms? What can they do to get through it?
I can only speak on what I've done.
Yeah.
So I joined a fellowship, a 12-step fellowship. And okay. I know that there are other ways to recover.
Right. You went to meetings.
Right. I went to meetings. I got around a community of people that were going through the same thing that I was going through. It's important for a couple of reasons. One is you're going to be in a place where it's okay to be crazy. It's okay to feel crazy. It's okay to have these wild thoughts and to talk about the stuff that you did that you are not allowed to say out loud in public. And they are going to be there with you. We're going to laugh about it because we've all done it.
Right.
As crazy as you might think it is, the room's going to be laughing because we have all done it. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel safe so I could share this stuff. And then I opened up and I started to share about my little wins. And then people in the rooms would pick me up. And I, not only was I getting like this dopamine that I craved that way, but I was making friends and I was modeling a new, I guess, a group of friends where like, these are the healthiest people I've ever had in my life. Now these people are like really focused on like being better men. And like, how do we overcome these tough emotions? Like, how do we feel better? Like, how do we treat people better? Like, how do we be more helpful to others? Like, how do we have purpose in this life? And that was rewarded. Those conversations were cool. Mm-hmm. It was about like, this is cool. Like, this is cool here in this circle. This is cool. You're rewarded for doing these things. That was great. I think that was so beneficial for me.
But what if there are people who are doing that right now, but they're still in that fog?
Keep coming back.
Aren't there other ways that they can cope too?
So some of the other things you can do, and I think some of the more obvious ones people very much understand. Like mm-hmm. there are ways you can seek stimulus through a substance, still like a caffeine.
What is the natural
or sugar
way?
Or exercise.
Exercise, yeah. That's
right. I knew you're getting there.
Thank you.
Exercise is an excellent way.
Exercise, meditation, eating healthy. There are actually certain foods that you should be eating that are natural that will give you these, that will help release the hormone. We talk about all of these simple, basic things, and a lot of people think, oh, that's not going to work for me. That's so simple.
Yeah.
It takes consistency. It's not like a quick fix. It's not like I'm going to do this one time and I'm going to I'm going to feel great. It takes time. And also, don't you think just saying like, hey, you know, you'll get through this. Like this isn't permanent. This state of feeling clouded or not being able to focus and that you feel like there's, you know, that you're numb, it will get better as long as you're still working on things and you're rewiring your brain and all that stuff.
Like my experience with numbness in general fades. Doesn't matter if I'm at the dentist or if I'm feeling it emotionally. It mm-hmm. generally fades away. Eventually you're going to feel again.
Yeah.
But you have to get through it. The only way out is through.
Yes.
So we have to stay alive long enough to get through it. So if we're going to stay alive, we might as well do everything in our power to get the most out of that period of time. It's going to suck. We can all agree on that in the beginning. Okay. It's going to suck. Ready, break. Let's go. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
So for me, I got the emotional piece of it from you, from people in the groups, mm-hmm. and then the exercise piece was massive.
Yeah. What about doing something like learning a new skill? You know, what if you want to learn how to play guitar or something like that?
I think early, I didn't have the bandwidth for it.
You didn't have that?
No, I didn't have, like my creativity came back slower and slower. Like,
but do you feel, don't you feel like you've had this come up again a few years later?
I've been depressed in recovery.
It's not necessarily depression. It might be, I don't want to say it's depression, but I want to say that it does feel very similar because you do feel numb.
Well, think about that period of time from like February of 21.
Yes.
Through that fall, basically.
Yes, when you were very highly stress.
Yeah.
About a 6 month
period, I felt like as low as I felt. Basically in my life, like I just felt like, man,
yes,
I'm worthless. I'm useless. Like there's no point.
You're going through things.
It was horrible
in life that are hard. And you had these feelings. It was very similar.
Yeah. Very, very similar. And I persevered through physical activity. Yeah. That's what kept me alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and kept me even somewhat useful to other people around me.
Do you feel like it was more difficult to get into physical activity like you had done before?
Yeah, I had to
like
force
it wasn't
myself.
It wasn't as consistent, right?
I had to force myself. It's like
right.
pulling teeth every time I went to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally one foot in front of the other, making myself go.
But once you did it, it was felt like, better. Wow.
Felt so much better.
You never regret a workout.
No, I've never gone to a workout or gone to a meeting or anything that's good for me and left being like, well, that was stupid.
Yeah.
Ever. Every time I've ever gone, I'm like, oh, I feel a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Even if it's 5% better, it's better.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worse. You know, physical activity makes all the feel-good chemicals flow. And you sleep better too. That's another part of it.
Yeah.
Sleep helps.
Sleep. Oh.
So I want to talk about you. I'm tired of talking about my stuff.
Okay, I was about to get it to me too. So
because I think that we can talk about this from a perspective of an addicted person all day long, but we have enough resources, right?
Yes, you do. But I want the spouses to understand what their partner is going through and how they can support them. That's why it was important to discuss your experience.
Good point.
That is why we are here.
Good
point. That's why we share both sides.
I think it's also relevant to further your point you just made is to say that it's unlikely that you're going to be able to have these big, like, groundbreaking emotional conversations, like, right out of the gate.
Yeah, for sure.
Right out of the gate is going to be really tough.
Mm-hmm.
If I have my way with people, I encourage these things much sooner than I went through them or what was, quote unquote, like, the natural path.
Yeah.
I think that sooner the better you can wake up.
Well,
to this
we
kind
do
of stuff.
Relationship building. We will work with couples who are in recovery
yeah,
and will help you
questions.
Through this type of situation.
Absolutely. A lot of it involves a self-care plan
mm-hmm.
for both people.
Yep.
It involves conversations that are forced at times.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have this conversation. We're going to get through this.
In a safe space, too.
Right. So that's super helpful. Yep. I wish I would have had that.
I know, right?
I wish I'd have had that. That existed back then. But anyway, so anhedonia, this blah feeling that
blah.
We have, isn't just unique to people in early recovery. Obviously, there's a biochemical reason for it for someone who's, you know, just remove themselves from some sort of substance abuse. But for people that have been in survival mode, similar feelings are reported.
Yes.
We are not doctors. I'm not diagnosing anyone
nope.
anything.
Mm-mm.
All we have identified is that this is a very similar feeling to what others go through. And you went through something
absolutely.
Very similar.
Yes. And I've actually gone through it, I want to say multiple times up and down throughout my own life. I mean, since you've been sober, I didn't do it much when you were using, but
do you remember in early recovery going through this when I was in early recovery? Like, do you remember any milestones when you noticed things were getting better? Like for us, it's like the 3, 6, 9, 12 marks. Like every 3 months you notice a pretty sizable improvement. Do you remember any of that?
No, I don't remember much. And I've talked about this so much with the first year. I don't remember much because my life shifted so fast, so quickly. Things were happening. You know, like you said, we had a baby. We bought our first house. I got pregnant with our second.
We were so distracted.
I was working full time as well.
That's right. You were still working.
Yes. I was still working.
Like nonstop.
So I can't touch too much. I know that it was really hard. Because, you know, I was dealing with the distractions or whatnot, but I can't remember much from then.
So let's talk about a bit of your background with this, because you've dealt with anxiety, depressive episodes in the
mm-hmm.
past.
Mm-hmm.
Does what we're describing here feel different than depression?
No.
It feels the same to you.
Yeah. It felt the same to me. Like I couldn't feel anything.
Do you think it was depression? How do you know it wasn't depression? Well, I guess what I'm asking.
I don't know. I went to the doctor and they said you have depression. It's just really similar. I mean, I felt like nothing could bring me joy. I felt like I would try to do things and it just didn't make me happy. And that's when,
Sorry. That's our dog. She says hello. That's Winnie Beans.
I want to say, like, the first time that I really remember this was when I was going through my my rock bottom after you were sober for 6-ish years or whatnot.
Yeah.
That's when I started feeling this way. And I remember that I tried to start working out, you know, to try to get that dopamine kick coming up. And I went and I still felt like crap. I was like, this is not working. I'm not getting a dopamine kick. Like, I don't feel good at all. And that kind of scared me because I was like, is something wrong with me? Then I realized I just had to be more consistent with it. But I wanted to shift for just a second about that. My life changed so drastically when your life changed, but I didn't have anything to help me through it. And I enjoyed that. My pleasure would be going out on dates, or not going out on dates, but just like going out and doing things together. And we don't do that anymore.
Ooh, let's talk about this for a minute. Let's go on a side quest.
I don't know if this is necessarily this.
No, but I think this is an important topic.
But it does. It did affect me because I'm like, how am I supposed to find my pleasure when my pleasure was surrounded by us going out, you know, and enjoying some cocktails and dinner and food and dessert and walking around and having date nights like normies, right? Like, that was fun for me.
Can I ask you a question?
Well,
do you miss the old me?
Sometimes I do. And some people are going to think about that and be like,
that's
what?
Crazy.
But I guarantee you there are people listening to this who might tear up a little bit and think, wow, like, I do miss that person. Yeah. We had some good times. We had some good times.
It wasn't always bad.
You know, we were in our early 20s and we had fun. I thought that we would be able to have normal nights out, you know, dating, having a couple of drinks, enjoying ourselves. And we don't have that. So I do. I miss that. I wish I thought that would be part of my life, you know, and vacations are different, right. you know, and I know that I'm not saying that it's all about the alcohol, obviously, but you know, when you do have those, it lowers your inhibitions. You know,
it's just
the
vibe of it all.
It's a vibe.
It's the vibe of it all.
It's a vibe. Sitting on a patio, you know, we always liked patio weather. Pool time, you know, like, I want to enjoy a couple of drinks, and we didn't have that.
Yeah, and people might think it's blasphemous to say, but I've always appreciated your honesty about it, and I think we've both been honest about this. Like, it would be disingenuous to say that being sober is always more fun than drinking. Mm-hmm. Let's say remember we went to that nightclub. We went and got bottle service at a nightclub.
Yeah.
After leaving a hockey game, mm-hmm. we'd already had a few. And so
yes.
She's like, I want to go to this nightclub. And so I was like, all right, let's go. I don't know, 7 years, 8 years sober at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go to the nightclub. So we go to the nightclub and Paige is having a great time. she's got friends of ours pouring vodka straight from the bottle.
It's so gross.
I'm sitting there with my Red Bull, just kind of laughing, looking around. But truthfully, I'm feeling a little awkward and out of place, and it's incredibly loud, and I'm looking around at everyone smiling and have a good time, and I'm saying, for the first time, I think I realized, like, I'm not having as much fun as everyone else, mm-hmm. but I was okay with it.
Yeah.
I was okay with it. This is where I think people get things twisted about, like, listen, sobriety is wonderful, and the pros outweigh the cons, no doubt. On the aggregate, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But there are those nights where I'm having 80% as much fun as everyone else because I'm still a good time. Mm-hmm. But the other 20% is out there, and like everyone else is. It's easier to have a good time when you're drunk in an environment like that. Mm-hmm. And for you, I'm sure that there are plenty of moments where we're out and we're hanging out, and you know, I might get tired, or you're just tired of talking about some BS, and you just want to go yuck it up and like get drunk and just do some silly shit. I don't mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just not on the table anymore.
Well, here's another thing that I don't know if we've ever really truly discussed this, but you know, I did not get a party life much whenever we were in our young 20s.
You were so responsible, man.
I was very responsible. I'm very emotional today. I don't want to cry about this, but like I didn't go to concerts. I didn't go to clubs. I didn't hang out with friends. I worked full time. And I, you know, whenever you partied or you got messed up, we were always home. We never went out to go do things and have fun. I missed that. I didn't have that. I didn't do it. So now as I'm, you know, pushing 40 and my kids are older and we're able to do more things, you know, I enjoy going to concerts. I want to go do things that I didn't get to do. Like I didn't get to do that stuff.
And we do those things.
We do now.
We do now. For a while we didn't.
No, we started this last year.
Yeah. And I would say it's important to start to live the life that you always imagined, but without alcohol. And this is something that I was very adamant on day one, was that I never want you to feel like you can't drink around me, because you're a completely normal drinker. You might have, did you even drink this week?
No.
Yeah. See, like you, no. she'll go like a week without drinking or 2 weeks. She doesn't even think about it. Right.
No. But, and even when we go to these concerts and stuff, I don't partake either.
Yeah. And
which is fine. I
think it's important though, that as someone in recovery, that I never slow anyone else's good time down. Like I want you to have a good time. And every so often you'll cut loose and you'll just kind of, go whatever, we'll have a good time. But there are plenty of other nights where, like, I'm sure you'd like to hang out and get drunk and have some wild conversations on a patio, but you know, I'm a good time. Don't get me wrong. I think I'm still a better time than most people.
But, no, you're a great time.
We used to have a blast.
I mean, it was fun until it wasn't fun.
Yeah, it was obviously too much fun.
But I think it saved me too, because I could have easily, I know in a lot of these relationships,
both people could have easily
gone down. And I've been super honest and open about this, about how I did cope with alcohol for a while, younger years. Like it was part of something that I did deal with. But it was easy for me to cut it off. Like it was really easy for me to just like, I don't want that anymore. I'm good. And I learned how to do other things that were healthy. But it did save me as well, because had you gone down that road still, I probably would have been going down it even just as hard. And that's the sad reality of it.
You know what else though is, I feel like, I know that I do this because I'm in recovery, but I feel like just people in general, we sort of romanticize the few times that alcohol really brought a good evening.
Mm-hmm.
We romanticize that handful of times. Think about all the times we ever drank together. I don't know, thousands?
Yeah.
How many good nights were there?
Not that many.
It's easy to romanticize it and to think about those moments, but it also, it's okay to hold two thoughts at once, to say like, even though it sucked, I still sometimes wish it were on the table.
Yeah.
While also understanding that it never will be, and being totally content with that. Mm-hmm. This is the gray area thinking that we right preach there. And talk
exactly.
about.
Exactly. That's what we do. And this is very open, vulnerable conversation, because people, they will come after us sometimes. They're like, oh my gosh, you drink alcohol sometimes. It's like, you don't understand. This is what we do. We are gray area thinkers, and we both have such respect for each other. We still know where the line is. Like, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It works out.
When we say feel the feels, like we mean it. All the feels.
Yeah.
All of them. So you can have all those emotions in one single night. Now, I think it's important to say, like, would we trade the life we have today for anything?
Nope.
Not in a million years.
No, but I can still have those feelings of,
for sure,
you know, like, okay, I miss that. And that's okay. You know, that's okay. I love where we are today.
Yeah. I don't miss the substance, but every so often I'll miss the context of drinking. So, me and a friend we went to an event last week, Friday, and afterward we ended up, like, the valet line was packed. So I was like, we have to go find somewhere to just basically waste time, because there's like an hour wait for a valet. So we went to a bar.
Yeah.
And so we're chilling at the bar, and he's, you know, normal guy, a couple drinks. I'm just sitting there. They didn't even have coffee. So I'm just sitting there drinking waters, you know?
Yeah.
In those moments, like, I miss the context of being able to, like, quote unquote, drink, but I don't miss the feeling of being drunk, and I know the consequences. So I don't miss any of that crap.
Yeah.
It's really just like the context of two men sharing a drink that I miss.
Right. So,
but it's not the substance, the buzz or any of that. It's like the context.
That's what I miss.
But we've also been I think, pretty good at recreating the absolute closest thing to it.
Yeah.
Which is the intimacy we have in our relationship today.
Right.
Which I would not trade for effing anything.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything.
I agree. But back to this.
Anhedonia.
Yes. Okay. So another thing that I was thinking of is that I'm home all the time. Like I work from home. I'm always here. I don't get my pleasure elsewhere. So it's very difficult for me. It's very easy for me to get sucked into that no feeling mentality because I have the same routine,
the same scenery,
the same, all of that. So it's been difficult to find that pleasure from getting it elsewhere.
Yeah. Especially when you're looking at the same four walls every
right.
day.
Right. Like you're able to leave every day. Like you have,
go to the office,
you go to the
stuff.
Office, you have meetings, you know, you get out a lot. I don't. So I do get sucked into that.
No doubt. It's got to be a lot tougher.
Yes. So I have to really be intentional with meditating,
working,
journaling,
out,
working out,
eating right,
reading from, you know, it's all the self-care stuff and eating right. You know, that's what keeps me from getting sucked into that numbness feeling. I know the days whenever I don't do it, I will get to that feeling where I feel numb and I just can't feel pleasure.
Yeah. This is just a life hack. On your days when you're feeling your absolute worst, get a workout in.
Yeah.
Get moving. And whatever that means to you, get moving. Mm-hmm. I don't just mean like a casual, I'm going to walk to the mailbox and back. Like get your heart rate going, break a sweat, get those feel good chemicals flowing. You will feel better afterward.
Your body naturally releases it.
And you will feel a sense of pride as well for doing something for yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's a win-win. It's a great way to get past this. And I encourage, so we're like a lot of addicts, alcoholics, we tend to be manic even in sobriety. So if we're not obsessing about one thing, we'll trade it for another. We've talked about trading addictions, like cross addictions in some sense.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about going from like getting sober off of a substance, going to another substance. I'm talking about behavioral stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm just an obsessive person in general where I will find something and I'll dig off on a wormhole and go nuts on something for a few weeks and then something else for a few weeks. But those are sort of the ways that I find these dopamine kicks now. Exercise was like my first one. I got obsessed with exercise. Mm-hmm. It was my life. I think because one, it was making me feel physically better and more mentally clear. And then it's kind of strengthened my community and everything else as well. But there are good addictions. There are bad addictions. You know, I think that you would have a hard time arguing that an addiction to exercise is worse than an addiction to drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
It's not. Addiction's addiction. Don't get me wrong. And you can take anything to an extreme and abuse it. But like I've told people in early recovery, like if you want to eat sugar, eat the sugar. We'll deal with that. We can address that at some later point. I know how to handle that too. For right now, if you just need to feel better, eat the Snickers bar.
Yeah.
Suck on the butterscotch.
Yeah.
Old timers in the program, they keep hard candy. Around. Mm-hmm. And they'll just say, just suck on these 24/7. Mm-hmm. They'll give you like Jolly Ranchers or whatever.
Yeah.
Isn't that the most old person candy ever? No offense to old people.
Jolly Rancher?
Yeah.
I always thought those were little kid candies.
That's an old guy candy, I think.
Mm-hmm. I don't like Jolly Rancher.
What about those little strawberry things that have the goo in the middle?
Ew. I don't know what those are called.
Where do those even come from?
I don't
know. I've never seen them for sale, but they're in every old guy's candy jar.
Maybe they come
and
from
teachers.
That Brock's section. Remember that?
Yes.
At the grocery store.
That's where those come from.
Pick out the little candies.
Those are like an enigma. I don't know where they actually come from.
Yeah. I don't even know what they're called.
Somewhere they're making them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're selling them.
Yeah.
Unless that was just like an 80s and 90s thing. Are they still around?
Yeah, I think so.
How do you know you just didn't see leftover ones from the 80s? Because they're always old too.
That's gross. I do. I think that they have them. I remember I saw something on social media recently where they posted it up and said, this is still around, but nobody knows what it's called. It's the strawberry stuff. Yeah, hummingbird on there. That was cute.
Okay, so anhedonia, the state of malaise, a state of blah, is not just unique to people in early recovery, although much more prevalent. This happens to spouses and partners as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the science behind this, but I know there's something to it. That coming out of survival mode where you've just been in such a hyper state, like hyper vigilant state of always making sure that, listen, it's all up to me to make
high
sure
stress
that this,
environments.
Yeah, that this household stays together on any given day.
Yeah.
And then coming out of that must feel like shell shock. Like when they took soldiers off the front line and suddenly mm-hmm. they're like, it's like PTSD.
Yeah.
Feeling just completely lost.
Yes.
This is why we are, and I say we, you were the champion of the self-care movement within the community.
Uh-huh.
Y'all post what you're doing for your self-care today, every day.
Every day.
We've got people that post consistently and I love seeing them. You know you are because I've made mention of it before. I love the consistency where you're in there every single day doing something for you. I promise you they're getting somewhere with these little bitty wins. You stack little wins on top of each other and before you know it, you've created something huge.
Yeah.
But you're not going to feel better right away.
No.
It does not get better right away.
No. And it can take, I don't know. I mean, it can take months. I mean, really, like I remember my first year of healing was rough. Like I was having feelings all over the place where I was numb
too. It's not exactly linear.
No, it's not. And I had to just be consistent with what I was doing. And finally, eventually, it was just like, whoa, like this actually works. It really does work. Self-care works.
It absolutely works.
Yes. It's doing the hard thing to benefit you later.
Yep. And if you're going to be at the workshop, we'll talk about this in depth.
Absolutely.
I'm really looking forward to that.
I am too.
Can't wait to see people.
I know.
We got people coming in from all over.
Yeah.
It's going to be greatness.
Yep.
If you haven't signed up, please do. We'd like to fill this thing up, get as many people as possible. I think that would just be the most electric environment ever. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, we will deliver. We will make it fun.
Yep.
And informative.
Exactly.
But yeah.
All of it.
It's going to be a great time.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great time. I think that's all we've got here on Anhedonia.
I think so too. Blah. Yeah.
Did you have something else?
No, I was kind of all over the place with it. And I hope it came out okay. Because I'm not... Yours has more information on it. Mine did not. I had to actually just bring it out from experience.
Yeah.
There's not much out there for us.
No, there's not. But we know what can get you out of it.
Exactly.
And if you're not aware, hey man, dive in. Listen to episodes. Check out the course. We can get you through it.
Yep.
We can get you through it. More than happy to. It's what we're here for. I was going to say something else. Oh, yeah. If this does sound a little off, just full disclosure, we are out of it in a way that I don't think I've ever been out of it before. We've got kids and activities on any given day, like running around.
It's been
here. You
very
pick
hectic.
Her up, or you drop her off. I'll pick her up. Oh, we've got a practice over here at this field.
Meetings.
We've got
competitions.
Meetings, and then
rehearsals.
We have business meetings throughout the week. I have a full time position with all kinds of crazy stuff going on right now.
We've been really slacking on our self care.
Yeah.
Just going to be real with that. And this is what happens. This is why we know how to get out of it because we know this feeling that we're having and we know what needs to be done to get out of it, which is kind of cool because it's not like we're sitting in it to where it's like, oh, this is new and I don't know if I'm going to get through it.
No,
you will get through it because I know that we will get through it because we've been here before.
I think at first we both were like, I think this is just a season of busy and it'll pass.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is the new normal.
Uh-huh.
With the podcast, with the courses, with everything that we're trying to do and trying to build, and plus our other life obligations that are actually more important. We have children.
Right.
You know, like that stuff. This is just what life is going to be like. Mm-hmm. This is what hard feels like.
Yes.
So we're just going to have to figure it out. But yes. I'm telling you, like in the wildest, we live the wildest, craziest schedule, I think. Of anyone I know by far.
Yeah.
And we're okay. We're making it. You can make it. We're here for it. We will show you it can be done.
Yes. But just know that we know that you can get out of it.
Promise you can. It may not feel like it.
We can. I know that we're going to feel better once we start putting our self-care priority, that's what's going to get us out of it. See, I can't even freaking talk. Like I'm telling you, I am so off.
Here's something I know. And I learned this like first week I was sober. You cannot think yourself into right acting.
You have to act yourself into right thinking.
Absolutely.
I remember you taught me that forever and it took me a long time.
True.
And it is true. It is true.
You are not going to think yourself out of this. You have to act yourself out of this. I've tell people in recovery this all the time. You think, oh, okay, genius, tell me how you're going to fix all these problems with the same brain that created them.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to take new actions, rewire that brain, and then you'll be okay.
Yeah.
But to think that you're just going to think your way out of the paper bag, it's not going to happen.
Mm-mm.
It has to take place with actions. And that means actions against your will.
Yes. You got to force yourself.
Have we talked about AMCC? You're looking at me like I just
got
lobsters
growing out
of my ears.
Yeah, I know because I don't know what you're talking about.
The anterior mid-cingulate cortex. It's a part of the brain that's responsible for willpower. This is a Huberman thing.
It's fine. No. Are we going on another tangent? Just what are we really doing? Really
quickly, there's a part of your brain that you can actually grow when you do something that you don't want to do. If you don't want to vacuum, literally force yourself in that moment to do it. And it becomes easier to do things you don't want
to
do.
Well, that makes sense when it comes to like eating healthy and exercise. Like it's easier, so much easier now than the beginning.
That is you exercising your anterior mid-cingulate cortex.
I need to do that with laundry.
Let's go exercise our AMCC and get this crap done. This laundry. But anyway, there is science behind it. It's very, very interesting. And I will link Huberman and the Treehouse Recovery link on Anhedonia as well. Good YouTube videos to watch. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Credit for most of the content of this episode to those two sources. The rest of it came from our lives.
Yes.
All right. Well, until next time, I am Matt.
I'm Paige.
And we'll see you.
Bye.